You're listening to something awesome. This is Nutty Bites.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and today I've got a nutty debate for you. With me, as always, is...
Hi, I'm Tech.
And special guest...
The Serial Killer.
Yay! Serial Killer is back in Nimlas Studios in the house. And today we're going to talk about anticipation versus delivery. And I want to talk about the movies that you anticipated the most and the delivery, or movies that you didn't really anticipate but blew you away.
Can you do me a favor, though?
Yes.
Can you hype this episode before release it so that everyone anticipates the release of the episode, and then everyone can get let down when they figure out that it's just the three of us on the microphones? And it's not that good.
You'll never guess what my special guest did next.
Nothing.
All clickbait titles. So, for instance, many Star Trek movies did I anticipate. I couldn't wait. I had ticket in hand. I was going to the first showing, and I'd go into the theater and go, oh. I mean, yeah, there were some movies that I saw in the theater that were fantastic, and that's what built this anticipation.
Super Data!
Yeah. Going in and seeing Nemesis.
Can I make an awful confession?
Yes.
Nemesis is the only Star Trek movie I've seen in theater.
You poor, poor man.
I saw it twice. The second time I saw it completely drunk, it was much, much better.
Well, I'll also say I had a similar reaction to the second Lord of the Rings movie. I really liked the first one. Was it the second or the third? I forget. Whichever one I saw with you guys.
And Legolas... Because I haven't seen the third.
Legolas was surfing down over people on the back of a shield.
Oh, or the constant one-upsmanship. Yes, mm-hmm. between a legendary archer who should have discipline in his life and a dour dwarf. Yes, this is how things go.
Mm. So yes, many of the Star Trek movies did I anticipate wonderful things for and then get disappointed.
How about anticipating a movie so much as a culture that the anticipation of the movie spawned its own movie?
Oh, I know what you're going to talk
episode
about.
Episode 1. And we all wanted episode 1 to be good so badly that years later, you know, because it wasn't that good, years later it made the movie Fanboys, which is all about a group of friends anticipating episode 1.
You want us to strip to Menudo?
Even to the point when they stop in Iowa to beat up Trekkies at the birthplace of Kirk. Oh, yes.
And already... On the topic of fanboys and anticipation and Star Wars, you've got a society where already there is a person in a world where that movie exists that has a tattoo for the brand new upcoming movies. The little soccer droid has been immortalized already before the movie has even seen theater.
Well, I remember the anticipation for episode 1, and people were doing that. Any little thing that they saw, they would get tattoos.
Oh, yeah.
There were people with speculation. Fellow podcaster Father Roderick had all of these theories and was on all of these forums that he was actually invited to Skywalker Ranch, yeah. And he got to see the movie there, or one of the movies. I don't remember exactly the whole story, but there was so much anticipation over that movie. Even if they pulled it off, I don't think it could have lived up to it.
No, and that's the thing, is the modern hype machine is so so engaged and so powerful that how can you live up to it? When you've got a movie that's coming out in a year and a half. Now, this is the thing that I'm going to slightly change topics in movies here. A startling success of this would be Guardians of the Galaxy. An hour or a year and a half before they even had a movie ready to go, but when it was still in post-production, when they still hadn't tightened the graphics up, they were doing everything, they were hyping this movie, and everybody in the common viewing audience was going, the what now?
Yeah.
And then the movie hits, and thankfully for them, it's a movie that has been a huge success. But it's rare. And look at how early they were hyping this thing. It's a year and a half before the movie. And a trailer's out, but we don't even have the graphics completely finished for the movie.
Well, that's become the standard of sci-fi films, is you are going to release your trailers at least a year and a half in advance.
And that's the thing. This is a society that we're in this, we're in this mode. It's an industry. We're in this mode, and it hurts the industry in the long run to do it. It's not good practice to build up all this thing without really knowing whether or not you're going to succeed, because you can only burn the audience so many times before they're going to walk away from you and never want anything to do with you again.
Which is what I think is important in the hype is how it's hyped. I mean, if you look at the failure of episode one, I mean, it was, hey, do you like lightsabers? Well, our character has a double lightsaber. Hey, did you like that speeder bike scene in episode six? Well, we have speeder bike races. Hey, do you like crazy funny characters? Well, we have a crazy funny character, and he's animated. Awesome! That'll never go wrong. It's, you know, you mentioned one-upmanship. When you're one-upping in the hype to try to prove that, well, you know, no one's seen the movie yet, no one's seen a teaser or a trailer yet, but all you're going to talk about is how much better your new movie is going to be than everything else. But a movie doesn't always have to be better than the last one. It can be just as good. I don't expect every time I go to the theater to be one-upped on my past movie experiences. I've watched some movies in my past that were some of the great movies of my life. I don't expect every comedy I go to the theater to see to be better than I don't expect every comedy movie I go to see to be better than Doctor Strangelove. And I don't leave the theater disappointed when, oh man, that was a really, really funny movie, but it wasn't as funny as Doctor Strangelove. You know, I'm okay. It's not like the spirit of one-upmanship, unless you're in direct competition with another movie that's coming out at the same time and you're fighting for theater seats, then I see that competitive nature. Can we put a Star Trek and a Star Wars movie in theaters at the same time and let the fans just murder each other? Sure, that'd be awesome. Please don't murder each other, fans.
Yes, please don't. We need you.
But episode... that's what I'm so scared about. After seeing how they did the preview for episode one... and now you see the stuff for episode 7 coming out. It's like, hey, did you like double lightsabers? We made a triple lightsaber. Hey, did you like kooky comedy characters? We have a soccer ball droid. Hey, do you like bike races and chases and airplanes and things? We put all those in there, and the Millennium Falcon, and this and that, and we shoehorned 6 movies into a trailer.
And we did a spinoff of Spaceballs, Combing the Desert. That's what that stormtrooper is.
Oh, absolutely.
He's totally from that scene.
For Combing the Desert.
I think that movie coming out so early, everyone is not only... it's building up the anticipation, but geeks are so used to being let down that they're already destroying the film.
No, I'm scared. I'm just honestly scared. I want it to be good, but one, watching that pretty bad teaser... I'm excited. There's some cool things in there. There's a lot of things that scare me that can go wrong. And even worse, we've all seen what JJ did to Star Wars, did to Star Trek. If that's what he does to my beloved Trek, what is he going to do to Star Wars? And I can only pray for better.
I think you can expect a little bit better. Maybe not. Maybe he's going to let it, or maybe it'll flop, but this is a man who did admit during the press for Star Trek that he had barely watched any Star Trek before he accepted the director's seat, but he was a huge Star Wars fan. The problem might be that as a huge Star Wars fan, he might fanboy out, which is feeding into exactly what you're talking about. The, hey, this was cool, let's have something bigger, let's have something better of that. The other thing that I find is missing in a lot of hype these days is, where's the, in a world where? Where's that guy telling you what's actually going on in your trailer? You're seeing a teaser more than anything. You're not seeing a trailer so much. It's a teaser, a 20-second, hey, look at this cool lightsaber, look at this ship, look at that, tells me absolutely nothing about what I'm going to experience. It's letting people's rabid anticipation build up a world that they're not going to get. No one is going to get the perfect Star Wars movie they want. If you showed them what you intended with just a little bit of talk about the actual story, you'd be able to temper that anticipation with some sense of reality as well. And that would probably save the problem that we're looking at here.
I have less worry about the new Star Wars movie. I have developed a habit. I try not to watch too much about things now, because I find when they're promoting these things so early, you end up seeing 7 different trailers before you go to see the movie. Okay, I've seen half the movie now. You know, so I try to keep my distance. I did find out today, and I'm not sure if it's confirmed, that the director from the Fast and the Furious sequels has been signed on to do the next Star Trek.
Yes, JJ has thankfully stepped away.
But I'm a little scared. Although I did hear someone say that there is the fear that it could become a Star Trek Solar Drift.
Oh, my. Yes, in the new Star Trek movie, Kirk and his crew are going to steal a group of
Peregrine Falcons? Oh, my.
In the new Star Trek movie, Kirk and his crew are going to steal a collection of Peregrine fighters, and they are going to tool around the galaxy challenging other races and other factions to race pink slip challenges. That's going to be wonderful. It's the
would
new
that be
world.
Pink pads?
Ooh.
Pink isolinear chips? I don't know.
Strips of platinum.
Strips of platinum. I will say the 2009 Star Trek. My anticipation was this is going to suck, and then I went in and I was pleasantly surprised. I have my nitpicks. There are some problems, but the actual viewing experience was positive.
There was a 2009 Star Trek movie?
Yes.
Let me say this for the 2009 Star Trek and its sequel there, Into Darkness. It certainly wasn't the cast's fault.
Oh, no, the cast was amazing.
The casting director, the person who chose those actors, did a fantastic job. They portrayed the characters to their core, and the actors acted their heart out. Chris Pine as Kirk... He does such a wonderful a young Kirk with the sit and the attitude. I mean, him with the green chick.
It's obvious that he studied. It's obvious that he embodied the character and wanted to be Kirk. Not just wanted to be, this guy's named Kirk on paper? Yeah, I can do this. It was, he wanted to be not completely Shatner's Kirk, but a true version of that Kirk.
Because William Shatner himself is an actor interpreting a character. Mm-hmm. And being able to look past an actor's performance to interpret that character correctly. Because Shatner was playing an older Kirk. But to look at that and be able to distill that backwards to what would Shatner's Kirk have been like as a young man? Silas doing Spock.
Zachary Quinto.
Yeah, Silas. Doing a...
Siler.
Same thing. doing a wonderful job as Spock. Simon Pegg. Oh, God. Oh, great. Beautiful Scotty.
Simon Pegg was the heart of both of those movies.
I'm sorry, but Carl Urban as Bones was... Yeah. I think he wins the award for the most on the dot for the character.
Yeah, and it's true. It's not the fault of any one of the actors. It was trying to be too much of a stripped-down, new-generation, flashy, quick-cut scene. And it didn't... within the context and framework that they were given, they did wonderful things, but...
It was a... Mom, I've put it this way before, but it was a good sci-fi movie.
Yes.
It wasn't Star Trek.
That is exactly...
It's in my head, it is fan fiction. But it's good fan fiction, and it's totally fine, and I'm happy with it. Most of it. The 2009 movie, I thought, was a really enjoyable viewing experience. The Into Darkness movie, if you're a fan, you have, at least for me, I had a lot of problems, and I couldn't shut my brain off for a lot of it.
Yes, but you have headcanon theories that are wonderful.
Yes, I have fixed it with my headcanon theory that Benedict Cumberbatch's character is not Khan. Khan was not woken up. He was woken up, and he chose the name Khan because that was the leader, and he was using it as inspiration and a way to strike fear in people. and he was emulating him.
Yes,
and what he thought he might do.
But unfortunately, if headcanon has to fix the day that screenwriter has fallen.
Are you kidding? Do you know how much headcanon I have for, like, the Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, yes. and yes. Enterprise?
You have headcanon for it, but it's not needed to fix the day. It's needed. It augments, in this case. It makes things better. It doesn't necessarily fix.
So this is a message to all the wireless listeners. I have to say, I'm a gun guy, and every time they say the word headcanon, I get a completely different mental image, and I'm really, really enjoying this. If any of you out there are artistically inclined and wish to draw me a headcanon, I would love you very much. I would love to see interpretations of a headcanon.
Make it pirate style.
Yar.
Yar.
Fuse and parrot.
Yeah, and also remember that, yes, the Star Trek Solar Drift, complete with Peregrine Fighter Theft. That's actually, it's going to be out there in the world. Spread it out there now, please do.
I would be very happy seeing a fan production of that.
Yes,
that
please,
would be
fans,
awesome.
Get on it. Help. Cast me as something. I don't need to be a big part. Just make me the Stan Lee of your movie. Make me walk in.
So can we talk about other things that haven't lived up to the hype?
Sure.
Okay, Luc Besson, the guy that did...
The Professional,
Fifth Element, all of those things, has this little-known movie franchise. I think there are up to four or five movies now in France called Taxi.
Taxi.
They're practical effect movies. They're all based around automotive stunts. He also did Ronin, if I'm not mistaken, and a lot of the driving scenes in Ronin is in the same style as the driving scenes you'd see in the three or four French Taxi movies, all based around a... Yes?
I think I know where you're going with
right.
this.
Right. All based around a taxi driver in Marseille who evades the cops because his taxi cab is actually a V12 twin-turbo-powered race car of the gods, and he's just the coolest thing ever. So imagine my surprise when I found out that Luc Besson is bringing Taxi to North America. And it turned out to be Jimmy Fallon and Queen Latifah Ooh. In a Crown Victoria in New York City, rehashing horrid jokes and a crummy looking car full of CG with none of the practical effects, and it was theatrical garbage.
I can't actually empathize because I haven't seen the movie. I got out of work once, or I got out of answering my phone while on call at work once saying I watched that movie, but I never did because I knew it would be horrible. Unfortunately, I got quizzed after when I went back to work and things didn't go quite so well, but... Mm.
The movie wasn't a bad movie. It was a nice comedy. It wasn't Taxi. I love Queen Latifah. She can do no wrong in my eyes, and she was amazing in that movie. But it wasn't Taxi.
And on the same on a similar bent.
Wait, before we move on, you did when you were mentioning Luc Besson's credits, you never even mentioned La Femme Nikita.
Oh, the original of yeah. Nikita, yes.
And again, yet another adaptation that did not live up to the original source material. That could be a whole topic, because while on that, Brick
Which
Mansions.
One?
Don't know that one.
Ah, District B-13.
Don't know that one either.
Parkour, David Bell.
Oh, okay.
Yes, District B-13, the Americanized version of it, starring David Bell and Paul Walker,
oh, Lord.
Was the exact same script... Just with Paul Walker and America.
America.
So much of a letdown when they could have gone so many different places with that. They basically just took it from Paris, threw it into Detroit, and here we have the same exact movie.
You want to hear a movie that was highly anticipated that I feel delivered? And I'm bringing this up because I know there's some mixed nut cases going. They haven't mentioned this franchise yet. I know they're going to mention it at some point. I'm just waiting for them to mention it. Serenity. We waited how many years for that movie? There was talk about that movie. The Signal, the podcast, started long before the movie happened, and it was all about getting us a movie. And then finally the movie happens, and I go to the theater, and I cry, and I laugh. And it's wonderful.
Because you know what the difference was there? That usually when a theater, a movie adaptation of a beloved franchise comes out, it's how can I water down the franchise to appeal to Johnny Sixpack, to the common man? Oh, like what JJ did to Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, the idea to make it appeal to everyone so that more people will go to the theaters. Serenity was written for Browncoats, for Fan of Firefly. He didn't water a thing down. He explained a couple of things to help other people into the world. Mm-hmm. He didn't dilute his franchise, and it came out like a hit. More people need to listen to that.
And the other difference is a lot of the hype there was not corporate hype. It was fan hype.
Absolutely.
It was fan hype and fan belief and fan
guerrilla marketing
that brought the movie to fruition in the first place. It wasn't a corporate thing. Yes, it may have had corporate financing. Yes, it may have had corporate hype behind it at some point. But the anticipation and groundswell came from the fans. And if only Hollywood realized that tap the markets of where the fans are looking at, we would have a lot more satisfying movie-going experience.
Well, that's been my argument for Star Trek all the time. They keep trying to make these Star Trek movies to appeal to the masses. I mean, all of Enterprise was meant to pull in non-Trekkies. If you just make stuff for Trekkies, Trekkies will come and we'll watch your movie a couple of times and we'll spend buckets of money we don't actually have.
And we'll drag along our non-Trekkie friends and make them into Trekkies.
But when you water it down, it makes anybody who isn't a Trekkie to say, oh yeah, see? You keep telling me I gotta watch this Star Trek thing, but it was lame.
And they cannot say that there is not fan love out there for the Star Trek universe.
Well, look how many fan series there are. Continuum.
Yeah, I can count four off Renegades. The top of my head. Phoenix. Which was the Seattle production at one point. I met the cast and crew of that.
What's the first one? The Journey? Legendary Journeys? No, that's Hercules.
plus the actors themselves keep going on and doing voice work.
Or showing up in the actual fan production.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the one I'm trying to think of is when Walter Koenig comes in and plays Chekhov, who's aging because of some transporter
thing. And Tim Russ
was
in there as well. That was Renegades.
No. It wasn't Renegades. It was the first one.
Oh, because he's involved with Renegades as well. He's got the promo where he's got the two beautiful women beside him, and he makes the comment, I think it's good to be Admiral.
Yeah.
And it was.
I'll give you another franchise that I wasn't disappointed in.
Yes.
That lived up to the hype.
Yes.
The Chris Nolan Batman trilogy.
Yes.
Very good. Now, the third movie was definitely the weaker of the three, and Bane came off a little weird. But overall, as a franchise, I felt that they were wonderful. They lived up to the hype. They were well done. They were not annoying to the fans. Batman fans liked it. It didn't water anything down. It was a gritty, dark, real look at this world, and it was done very well.
Yeah.
And they didn't pull the other Batman, you know, where the first movie was so epically good. And then the second movie was horrible, but the actors couldn't get out of their contracts.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And it was one of those ones where there was an amazing amount of hype for those movies as well. This is one where it had the same problems that we've talked about already about hype, where a year before there's trailers, where there's cups in the theaters before it comes out, where there's cereal box promotions, where there's all of these things, but it's still delivered. And I think that has a large part to do with Christopher Nolan. It's not, you know, it's the people involved. You got Christian Bale was an inspired casting for that role. And one that if you had told fans a few years before that Christian Bale was going to be Batman, they would have gone, what? That American Psycho guy? The creepy thin dude from the Machinist? No.
Well, I remember when I heard the casting, because I've been a fan of Christian Bale since Newsies and Little Women. So when I heard that he was being cast as Batman, I was like, okay, but I knew he was a good actor. And you don't have to fit the type if you're a good actor.
Yes, but it's even then he fit the type in a way that people wouldn't have anticipated.
Well, he also changed his body for the role.
Yeah, and that's, well, The Machinist is another great example of Christian Bale's insanity.
He was down to 130 pounds for that role.
Yeah. And then he bulked up.
We could probably do an entire topic on the lengths that certain actors will go to accommodate roles. For example, Chris Pratt getting in wonderful shape for Guardians of the Galaxy.
I think I saw something, an interview with him where he said, honey, I'm going to be Star-Lord, so you need to stop making me donuts.
Natalie Portman for Black Swan.
Yes, and Mila Kunis.
It's especially sad. I remember seeing something for Natalie Portman that after the role, when she tried to gain the weight back, it didn't go back on the same way.
Yeah.
And she's been permanently changed by the amount of weight that she had to lose. And I'm sorry you had to go through that, Natalie. We still love you.
And Black Swan was amazing.
Fantastic. Well done. Yes,
amazing movie. I read something recently where Natalie Portman said being in Star Wars ruined her career. And I can totally agree with that in the sense that people watched it and said, oh, yeah, she can't act as well as she could when she was younger. And it's like, no, that's not her fault. That's the director's fault.
Oh, it was so ruinous.
Well, we knew she could act before. We all saw a professional.
Oh, yeah. And V.
And another one of those movies where, while the transformation might not have been as startling, you ask a woman to shave her head, and that's a huge change.
Karen Gillan did that, too.
A lot of the time, hype doesn't have to be huge for something to be successful if you get the right people involved. So there's an alchemy to it. There is an alchemy of getting the right people together, getting the right amount of word out, letting the fans pick it up and run with it, that Hollywood sometimes manages. Mm-hmm. Sometimes manages, but they stray.
Here's some more movies that I have anticipated greatly and mostly was let down. And most of those are Broadway musicals brought to film. And because there have been so many failures, it makes me think that any attempt is going to suck. There have been the occasions that didn't suck. Chicago. Really well done. The Producers, Hairspray, which is weird because it was a movie, then a play, then a movie.
Les Miserables,
as I haven't seen the new musical.
Okay.
But I did see the Liam Neeson one that has no singing in it, and that was really good. But that wasn't adapted from the play, that was adapted from the book. But like Mamma Mia, the movie, terrible. Rent, the movie, horrible. Phantom of the Opera, grade school production quality, Cabaret, and all of it. So now I'm seeing that Into the Woods, one of my favorite plays, is coming to theaters, and I'm scared. I don't think it's going
to
be good.
The thing that's important to remember is that you can't treat the stage like a static film screen.
Yeah.
And when you think that you can take a stage production and put it on film and somehow keep that, you know, that magic in the jar, somehow, you know, keep the same zing in a movie with just a couple camera cuts, it doesn't work. It really, really, really requires theatrical magic to completely reinvent the thing. You just can't take Mamma Mia and put it in front of a camera and expect it to work. It won't. The theater, I've only seen a few theatrical productions in my time. I'm not a big theater buff, but the things I have seen were complete genius. I loved Spamalot. Spamalot was wonderful.
That was so good.
Spamalot is not Monty Python's Holy Grail on stage. And they say that, you know, from the very beginning. And if you think it is, you'll be disappointed. As they said, it's lovingly ripped off from Monty Python's Holy Grail. And they had to completely reimagine the thing. If you were to try to make a Spamalot movie, it wouldn't work.
Right. Well, and I think that's one of the things that the Hairspray movie did really well is they turned away from the idea of the stage and they really did incorporate some really interesting cinematography. The whole opening scene of Good Morning Baltimore as she's walking through the streets, it keeps it interesting. That's just one of those things that really it makes me nervous. So I'm gonna suggest another thing that was highly anticipated and I'm still on the side of it being good, and that is Game of Thrones.
Ah, yes. Now, there's...
It's not perfect, but it is one of the best adaptations I've seen, I think.
And again, something that was hugely hyped, which is even more surprising in this in the current climate because it's HBO. HBO is not... They don't do their own hype usually. It's one of those things where if you know about HBO shows, you know they're going to have a certain level of quality, and you run with it. I never saw a show as hyped on HBO as Game of Thrones was.
I mean, they had traditional marketing. They were giving out lemon cakes from food trucks in New York and Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Whenever you go to the big Comic Cons, the Iron Throne is there. I learned in season two to stop reading articles about it and to stop looking at all the trailers because it can lessen the effect. So I will glance at casting, but I try not to pay attention to casting. And I'll just watch, you know, the one trailer and not all the vignettes.
And the other thing with Game of Thrones that you have to be aware of, and that the hype, or the not the hype, but the reception is mixed, is that it's you have to know that they're not going to be 100% true to the books. And nothing can be that's adapted.
Yeah,
no.
And there's too much of that, and it builds with the hype and anticipation theme. There's too many people that will love a book franchise. They will love a series of books or a graphic novels or something else, and they will love it so much that they invest their own universe into it, and then they go to the theater and they do not see exactly what they imagined, and they hate it. Mm. And that's where hype is a dangerous thing, because we've got a preconceived notion. Books are a magical thing. They allow our minds to form entire universes. What was the quote I saw? It's, reading a book is a very strange thing. We're reading thousands of pressed pieces of dead tree and hallucinating vividly for hours on end.
So what you're saying is trees are drugs.
True. And it unlocks that part of the mind that instantly, as soon as it doesn't match our reality, we are a little bit hurt. And hype does that in general, like when they pick up something like that.
And that's the danger of film and stage and these adaptations of books. It's that we could all read the same book, and we could all read the same short passage. And each of us envision something completely different based on our own perspective and experiences and points of view. And when you look at an international success like Game of Thrones, when you look at international success... various cultures around the world. I'm reminded of the adaptation of Hunger Games. When the film release of the Hunger Games came out and the one character was cast as a young black girl, that there was a massive outrage.
Would that be Rue?
Yeah, who is actually black in the book?
Well, that's what a lot of the fans and the outrage was over, is that the author never said the word black. The author said dark skinned, and that when it was cast as an actual black person, these fans got really, really mad and said very hateful, racist things about how the series was now ruined, because how could you do this, and why would they care about a black child? And it just went on and on and on and on with this vitriol. And just to show that, you know, perspective in reading a book, when somebody else interprets the vision,
yes,
it can be damaging.
And that's the dangerous hype game that Hollywood is playing a lot these days, because a lot of what's going on now in, not now, but has been for years now in Hollywood, is they will pick a beloved franchise. They will pick something that had startling success. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, for example, that may never have a chance of going to screen well, and say, well, we can make that.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Let's grab that. People love that. That's the buzzword, the hype. It's what everybody's on about these days. That's what we're going to grab. And then they'll run with it, and just the name alone comes with hype. And Game of Thrones, the Hunger Games, well, anything Star Trek, anything Star Wars.
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter was another one that met a lot of the success. Mm-hmm. That met some wonderful success. And
brought a lot of people into reading those books.
And then you get... The Harry Potter books are a wonderful book series that saw wonderful things with hype. You want to go the opposite direction to a horrible thing that saw horrible movies, but people still love them because they love their horror. You get Twilight. All of these...
Wait, what? Twilight's horror?
No. Horrible.
Oh, okay.
All of these... Oh, I love the way I said horrible there.
Horrible.
All of these franchises had cachet to begin with, and then they hype them end upon end, knowing full well that they're not going to please everybody, but they're going to grab everybody's money. Yeah. That's the vicious nature of Hollywood. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie again. again, and there was a lot of hype, there was a lot of anticipation, but it was the opposite way. It was super, super negative.
Well, because they failed so hard on the last movie.
Yeah, that's even discounting any movie that came before. It's you let Michael Bay touch our beloved franchise. You let him do anything with a beloved franchise. That man has done more damage to people's childhoods than any force on the planet.
That brings up another.
What did you do to Transformers? What did you? I'm not even watching Ninja Turtles. What did you do to Transformers, Mike? Just go away.
Yeah. Well, that was what I was going to say. How many of us anticipated Transformers when we saw Transformers was coming out?
Oh yes,
we were excited. We went and saw it in the theater.
Well, there was only two names I wanted to see, and that was Peter Cullen and Frank Welker.
And you know, and that failure to even tie into. Oh, we're tapping the nostalgia, but we're not going to pay enough attention to where it came from to give the fans that touch, that love back that they will connect with. There's no connection there.
And I'll tell you where it went wrong right off the get-go with that one was, okay, this is a beloved part of our childhood, and you wanted to, you know, you modernize things, you bring it into the new world, and I see that's fine. But you sold out, Mike, and you sold out for cash, and you sold out when you sold the movie to GM, because every vehicle in that thing was GM. And guess what? You tried to pay homage to it when he goes into the junkyard at the beginning, and he sees the old ratty yellow Beetle and the Camaro right next to it, and Bumblebee, who was always a Volkswagen, was the Camaro. But you tried to pay homage to us by showing us the little yellow Beetle. No, I'm sorry, Bumblebee is a Volkswagen Beetle, and guess what? Optimus Prime is not a Freightliner. He is a cab over Mac, always has, always will be. And I'm sorry you got a dump truck of money from GM, but it wasn't worth it, Mike. It wasn't worth it to I've never seen I hear someone keeps spouting these awful rumors that there might be sequels to this franchise. I've never seen past the first one. I don't think I ever want to. Just like, the same people that tell me this are the same people that tell me that there are two other Matrix movies.
Well, no,
and a second Boondock Saints.
There was actually one other Transformers movie. It was the one where Mark Wahlberg was in it, and he knew it was a
sashimi
movie, so he mocked it and mocked it and mocked it with his performance. But it was so bad that even he couldn't save it by knowing it was bad and acting bad in it.
I don't know what you're referencing.
I hear this from people, at least.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Some say.
Oh, you don't know what I'm referring to?
No,
I
don't.
I believe it was called Dark of the Moon or something like that. But
never heard of it.
No.
But the other problem with it is that Mike, if we're gonna call him on more familiar terms, that Mikey went with there is he tried to sex up our childhood.
Yeah,
he tried to sex up our childhood. Look at Megan Fox being in there. Did she serve any other purpose than to bend over the engine bay of that car?
Tank top. And
I could have had no problem with Megan Fox being in the movie. I have a problem with Megan Fox being there to be nothing but TNA.
Exactly. Mm. She
could have played a better role.
Now, I will say this. As much as it pains me to admit it, I watched TMNT on a plane. There was no other option, so I watched it. And guess what? On whatever there might have been for a sequel, after whatever may have happened with the Transformers franchise and the fallout that Michael Bay and Megan Fox had, she was back again. And guess what? She actually had lines this time.
Was she April O'Neil or something?
She was April O'Neil.
Really?
Now, here's the problem. They brought her back to actually have a role, to be a center role and to act, but then it was kind of painfully obvious she can't.
No. I can't make any decisions on her because I've only seen her with bad directors.
Hello!
Hey.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Matt.
And this is It's Science.
We pretty much talk about science and pop culture and what have you in a kind of funny way.
If it's geeky and can be linked to science, we'll find a way to get it in there. So you can listen to us on iTunes, where most podcasts live, Stitcher, TuneIn, and you can find us on Twitter at BinaryWomb.
Yeah, that's about it.
That's about it. Give us a listen.
It's science.
On the hype machines, the hype machine and drawing back to Marvel and DC and comic book movies, both Marvel and DC now have announced 10 years in advance what their plans are going to be for movies. I know right now who the cast of a Suicide Squad movie that has not even started filming is going to be. I know that Jared Leto is going to play the Joker and already have an opinion on whether or not he will be a good one. Why?
You know what my answer to all of that is, though? I mean, everyone's like, oh, we're finally going to get the Wonder Woman movie. We're finally going to get this. I've heard it before. I don't believe that anything's being done and anything's going to actually come out until they start filming. And even then, you don't know. They may cancel it.
Roger Corman's Fantastic Four. Hyped, filmed, realized it was crap, threw it in a vault.
The Wonder Woman TV series by David E. Kelly. A few screen caps, you know, filming, photographs from a film, one night of filming got out, and they canned the whole project because people realized it was poop. So other movies that, or projects that you anticipated extremely.
And were let down by, or...
Or the other way
or
around,
the other way,
something just... you anticipated and loved.
Well, one that disappointed me, honestly, the first Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to watch high fantasy. I wanted to finally be drawn into the world of Tolkien that I've never been able to crack those dense tomes. It was never my thing. I go to the theater, and it was Moses and the Ten Commandments for 9 hours. It was...
And no dang Tom Bombadil.
No, cursed Tom Bombadil. None of that stuff. And it was wordy and weird, and it was just people staring at each other wistfully and walking for 9 hours.
Oh, the love in Sam's eyes for
Frodo. Oh, exactly. It was weird.
Speaking of somebody who changed their bodies for a role.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was weird and slow and awkwardly paced because it would go action walking. Walking, talking.
And they walk.
More talking.
And walk.
Action! More talking, and walking, and talking, and staring, sleeping.
Okay, we get the idea.
A joke.
This is
action!
Only an hour-long show. here are some franchises that I thought were going to be terrible. Because of the hype, and because of what I had heard, and I said it sounded horribly stupid. Cabin in the Woods. I said, that sounds so stupid. I'm never going to see that.
Joss has that magic money-making machine somewhere in his basement. And
No. He tied the devil up and beats him whenever he wants something.
I didn't know what that was, and that was one of those movies that, Joss, he's pretty good. He does lots of good stuff. I like his casting. I like his style of writing. He's doing a horror movie. Pass? I'm not a horror guy. No, you need to see this movie.
I dragged him in to see the movie.
A related one, Much Ado About Nothing, Joss and Shakespeare.
You didn't think that was going to be good?
Cast in modern times. I've seen another anticipation thing. I love Shakespeare. Plenty of movies have disappointed me in the past. We crossed our dagger, as they crossed their daggers, Romeo and Juliet, the crossed guns with dagger written
I
on
love
them.
The Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet. That is an amazing movie.
Fetch my long sword,
I was so excited about that movie, and that movie was perfect.
Or
O was
the
terrible.
Horrible adaptation
no.
of
Tech has been told he's not allowed to see O because I know he'll hate it so much.
Yes.
And I am sparing him that pain because Julia Stiles is one of his favorites and he doesn't need to see that. But on that
she
topic,
10
Things I Hate About You was a very good Taming of the Shrew.
So,
yes, 10 Things I Hate About You
I
was
seen,
really good
I have seen
the
so many bad adaptations of Shakespearean works that I went, I like Joss, but... Joss is great when Joss writes his own characters and dialogue. This is going to be none of that magic. But what he delivered was canny casting, wonderful direction, and a great feel that, yes, it was modern, but without any silly concessions. Or when the silly concessions were there, it was with a wink and a nod.
Nathan Fillion and Tom Lank. Oh, they were great.
So that one was one of those ones that I anticipated was going to be bad and pleasantly surprised.
I anticipated that was going to be good only because I knew that Joss has this thing where he invites people over and they do read-throughs and improv acting of various Shakespeare plays. And that's how he knew Amy Acker had the chops to really act. And he created the Illyria character so that she could stretch. The other thing that I thought was going to be absolutely horrible, and this sounds so stupid and so dumb, and nobody's ever going to want to watch this, is Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, which, of course, I loved.
I knew the moment I heard about it that it was going to be wonderful. That was something that was just so...
I thought it was going to be so cheesy.
No, it was something that sounded so stupid I knew it had to succeed.
Yeah, but you like bad movies, like Commando.
Plan 9 from Outer Space.
But yeah, it's... Okay, so it's Doogie Howser.
Yeah.
And that guy from Firefly, along with the chick from that internet show... doing a musical? I hate musicals. This is going to be
and it's only going to be released online.
I'm sorry. How dare you reduce the wonder that is Felicia Day down to that chick from that internet show?
Well, you have to remember the time. Nobody knew who Felicia Day was back then.
This was
unless
before...
you watched the first season
Actually,
of The Guild.
Yes, I'm probably going to sound creepy stalkerish if I say I did know who she was before that. Yes.
But many people, it was, who is she? Oh, she was one of she was in season 7 of Buffy. Oh, okay.
Yes.
You know, and most people didn't know who she was.
True, but I have a certain weird level, or a certain level of faith in the weird that cannot be said of many people. So,
some hype for something coming up. That
yes.
I just saw the first piece. They've announced Clerks 3.
Ah, yes.
And it's along the way, and Kevin Smith has said that this is the last movie he will ever direct.
On that vein, three movies that I have yet to see because I'm not sure the state of production of them, but will be watching and anticipate. Again, they're weird, and they're Kevin Smith. The Canadian trilogy, his love letter to Canada and all things horrible, Tusk, Yoga Hosers, and the movie he has only ever described as Jaws with a Moose.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. When I heard that Clerks 2 was coming, that I was very interested in that, but I wasn't sure how it was going to play, and that worked out really well. And I am definitely anticipating Clerks 3. So, Serial Killer, what is one movie that you are highly anticipating?
Oh, this is going to make me seem bad, because actually, I have nothing that comes to mind. I have not been paying attention to movie hype lately. The Star Wars movies is a... I'm letting JJ win me over to the Star Wars franchise at this point. It's not
so he's Vader?
It's not anticipation so much as it is I'm giving it a chance that I haven't given Star Wars in the past. But otherwise, movie projects that are coming out, I will say, some of the schedule that's coming up for Marvel, some of the things like Doctor Strange, Benedict Cumberbatch is an inspired casting that I would never have thought about for that role. Yes, he's the flavor of the month or of the years, but he seems to have the gravitas to pull that off. Marvel's got good things coming. DC's got good things coming. I'm looking forward to it because both have actually been doing fairly well lately.
I'm always anticipating Wonder Woman, but also fearing it. The idea of Suicide Squad makes me very happy because it means we may see Harley Quinn.
The teasing they do on Arrow for that. They have an episode that deals with the squad where they mention the other member who's not around, and you hear the cutesy little voice in the background make a comment, and someone says something about that blonde, but she never appears.
Do we have a casting
Such
for
a
Harley
tease.
Quinn yet?
I cannot remember who it was, but when I looked at her right away, I went,
Well, you never know. When I first saw pictures of Gwendolyn Christie, I said, there's no way she can play Brienne. And she did. She did. She was perfect. And even though they aged up everyone in Hunger Games, when I first heard Jennifer Lawrence was getting cast, I said, oh, how the heck is she going to play Katniss? And I think she did a fairly good job. Same thing with Peter Dinklage.
Let's just go. Oh, no. Peter Dinklage was again inspired casting.
Well, he's too pretty.
Pretty to be the half man. But another one, another name that totally didn't seem to suit the role, but my, did he own it? It was Heath Ledger. I mean, who could have actually looked at his body of work and said, that man can pull off a psychopath that wonderfully lovable?
It was a great Joker.
Yes.
A great second place Joker. There is one better.
It's not Sid Caesar in your mind, is it?
No, nor is it Cesar Romero. It's Mark Hamill. Mark Hamill will always be the Joker. So a piece of advice to all you cosplayers out there, from all of the cosplay that I've been seeing of my beloved Harley Quinn.
the secret to a good Harley Quinn and what makes Harley is, one, the voice. And if you can't do the voice, that's fine. It's the smile. It's that, yeah, that goofy, zany smile. It's, you have to be bonkers to play Harley. You have to be bonkers to want to wear that outfit in the first place. And, you know, huzzah to you for wearing it. But if you don't have the smile, it's like having a Joker without the laugh. It's like having a Batman without the scowl.
And bringing your own hyenas helps too.
Absolutely.
Like the girl we met at Anna Maritime. That's the other thing. If you're cosplaying, getting the character right is so well. She had a custom made a Joker shirt. She drew the Joker in Sharpies on a white t-shirt. It was like a fan shirt or whatever.
Yeah, and then she had like a rolled up jean jacket over yep. top with a bunch of little characters on it. She had like a little a Joker backpack
yep.
on with a stuffed hyena yeah. sticking out of the back of it and a gigantic Banff mallet
in her hands. You knew who she was, but she didn't fit any of the comic book yeah, images.
But she was the character. She's definitely one of my favorites
that is
ever.
A thorough win because yeah. it's your interpretation of a character, which is more of a love letter to the creators of the character than just even the most wonderful imitation of what's already been put out there.
And whoever plays Harley better have the voice. That's all I'm saying. I mean, you can't match it exactly, but
hey, I'm just gonna say this. I whoever you are, if you're cosplaying out of love, I'm going to love you for cosplaying.
Oh no, I meant for the movie.
I'm looking at you, male Princess Leia, because you're loving the role. I don't have to love looking at you, but I'll love you for doing that.
No, I wasn't talking about cosplayers. I was talking about in the movie.
Oh, in the movie?
Yeah, no, cosplayers yeah. don't have to have the voice. They don't have to have the voice. They don't have to have the body. They don't have to have the gender, skin tone, hair, anything.
Because cosplayers aren't yeah. being paid to do it. They're doing it out of love.
And it's kind of fun to see how you can bring a character to life without mimicking it. I actually find people that do straight mimics of a character kind of to be cold.
Is that her?
Yes, that is her. She was in Pan Am.
Who is this?
This is the actress who... Margot Robbie is the actress who's going to play Harley Quinn, or at least so says IMDb.
Or she's been tapped for it at this yes. point, because they went through quite a few people for the Joker. Jared Leto, at one point, who is tapped now to play the Joker in Suicide Squad, might have been Doctor Strange at one point.
Well, she was in... This girl, Margot Robbie here, was in Pan Am.
Yeah.
She's a tall... pretty blonde. She's got part of the look, but in none of those photos do I see her smile. So I can't tell if she's Harley or not.
Yeah, we'll have to wait to see. So that we've said the shows that we are anticipating, and is there anything else we want to say before we sign out?
JJ, don't mess this up, buddy.
It's okay, JJ. I still won't care.
No. No. Two-star, two-trek, please.
You know what you did, JJ? You know how you thought you did that real funny thing when you told your special effects director in the last Star Trek movie, to put a flying R2 droid into the background of one of the scenes because you thought that'd be a real funny joke? Yeah, that wasn't funny. That was harmful.
Also, one piece of advice, JJ, less lens flares.
Yes.
I don't want to be blinded by your movies.
Well, didn't he go to a movie? Wasn't he sitting at one of his previews with his wife? And he watched a scene and then he turned to her and goes, you know, honey, I think I might have a problem.
I would love to think that's true.
I love what many people have said. The new Trek is all taking place in a Mac store.
Yes. And just a final word of advice to anybody actually looking to make movies in Hollywood these days. Don't let the Hollywood hype machine guide what your vision is. Be true to that vision, and the fans will follow.
Agreed.
Some of the greatest, a name that we all love in this house, Kevin Smith,
yes,
is pretty much true to that. Mm-hmm. Stayed true to his vision, and
except with Red State,
never saw it.
I have a message to the movie houses and network executives. Leave your creatives alone and let them create. No notes, no telling them what to do, no saying we need to appeal to a different demographic. Just let them do what they want.
You spent millions of dollars hiring these people to do what they are best at, and that's being creative. So
this goes along to anybody else here. If you're hiring a creative as part of your creative process, have a real good vetting process to make sure you hire the person that you want and then let them do their job. That's why you hired them. That's why you paid them the big money, is to let them be creative, not for you to nitpick what they're doing. If you're going to nitpick what a creative is doing, you might as well just do it yourself.
Yeah, and you're not creative, which is why you're not doing it.
Mr. Smith, I'm sorry. I loved Red State.
Anyway. All right, everyone. This was great. We will see you next time. Say goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Goodbye.
I wish there was a podcast I could listen to every day to keep up with the geeky world. Someplace I could find out about news, movies, comics, and video games. All that available every single day. There's no way a podcast could do it.
I guess I'm just a dreamer.
Hey, geek! Wake up! Geek Radio Daily is the podcast of your dreams. Go to geekradiodaily.com. Subscribe through iTunes or follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Geek Radio Daily provides your daily dose of geek, comics, movies, video games, news, and more. It's all the geek without the wait.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios. You can find us at nimlas.org/blog. Contact feedback at nuttybites@nimlas.org. Call our voicemail line at 347-NUTTY-42 or 347-688-8942. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. Basically, you can share it, you can send it around to your friends, just don't change it, don't sell it, don't try to make any money off of it, and link back to me, my site, and everything.